Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. To become a star on the world's major opera stage, it helps to have a few things going. Natural gifts, top-notch training, and a bit of luck. For Cheryl Milnes, there was another ingredient, working on a farm. Before a three-decade career singing at theaters from Milan to Vienna to right here in New York, Cheryl Milnes was milking cows and shoveling manure on his family's farm in Illinois. That work ethic helped him later on when he also became a conductor, teacher, and author. His memoir, American Aria, Encore, has been revised and reissued, and Cheryl Milnes joins us today from the studios of WUSF in Tampa, Florida. Cheryl, welcome to Soundcheck.
Well, thank you very much, John. You took all my opening lines from me.
Well, now let me start with a kind of an interesting opening gambit, if I might. You describe a moment early in your career where you did Rigoletto at the Met at night and then immediately flew home so that you could drive the hayride on the family farm the next day. Does that sort of... that flexibility, that stamina, that work ethic, has that given you an edge over the years?
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, working on a farm, not your grandfather's farm in the summer or your uncle's farm in the summer, but northern Illinois, milking cows 20 below zero, tough stuff. So maybe it gave me some extra things. I remember the hayrack rides. It was kind of a reality check. You were getting bravos one night on the stage of the Metropolitan Opera, and the next night they're saying, "Hey, Mr. Driver, how much longer is the ride?" But that's partly what my dad did for a living with horses, cattle, and whatnot. We had hay rides, tractors, and horses, and it was a good income for him in those years.
So how did you get into – I mean, given that this was your background, how did you get into opera?
Well, not as strange as it might seem. Obviously, farm to Metropolitan Opera, the Staatsoper in Vienna, or the Royal Opera House, wherever you want to talk about, seems like a long trip. But I was brought up in church music. My mother was a piano teacher, church choir director. And for her, church music was the great hymns, but also all the great oratorios. So Bach and Handel and Mozart and Beethoven and Schubert and Brahms and Mendelssohn, these great composers. I knew all of these kinds of works. So music was part of my background, milking cows, but listening to music, playing violin, piano, not so well, but I did, and obviously studying voice for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
but go ahead, John.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you write in the book about growing up and, you know, hoisting 60-pound bales of hay and, you know, working on the farm and the tractor and all the equipment. And, you know, it is potentially dangerous work. So it's very interesting to read your chapter called Opera Can Be Dangerous. I mean, you know, who knew that it was such a risky thing to stand out on that stage and sing? It almost seems like you kind of relish that aspect of what you do.
Well, I wouldn't say that I enjoyed getting hurt. That would wreak a little bit of Lawrence of Arabia, right? When he put the flame to his finger and could stand pain. None of us would choose pain. But opera can be dangerous. From a soprano's nails, the Pagliacci production where the Tony Onedda fight there and she scratches and opened a little bit of blood down my face, it made it quite realistic. We didn't plan it that way. Or a Tosca where I had – when Tosca stabs Scarpia and he dies, it's quite a dramatic death. And I worked out a thing in all opera houses, but this particular one happened at the Met. I fall back in a chair and then I tip the chair over. Mm-hmm. And I hit the back of my head on the iron leg of his cot. And I think the only time in my life when I could say I literally saw stars. Fortunately, I die.
You're supposed to be dead at that point anyway.
So I didn't have to come back in the third act.
But there was blood
coming down my face.
Yeah, I imagine the audience was saying, man, this guy's really giving it up for this performance tonight. We're speaking with Cheryl Milnes, and here he is in the opera Tosca. That is my guest, Cheryl Milnes, in the role of the evil police chief Scarpia in the opera Tosca. And Cheryl Milnes' book is called American Aria Encore. It's been revised and reissued. And in it, Cheryl, you write, quote, many mishaps have occurred over the years, but none more than in the opera Faust, unquote. So what, is Faust, is this a cursed role, a cursed opera?
No, it's a sword fight.
It's a sword fight.
And, you know, he has to fight with Faust, and the devil, Mephistopheles, kind of hexes him so he can't fight appropriately, because Valentin, the brother, the young baritone in that opera, is a swordsman.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it works out, you get Nicks. I have Vickers Nicks. I have Domingo Nicks. I have McCracken Nicks. I have Corelli Nicks. I have Delmonico Nicks. I have scars from all the famous people.
You got a Pavarotti on a knuckle there?
Oh, of course. Luciano is there somewhere. You know, I didn't initial them, so I can't identify them. But all the guys got at me one way or another.
So did you actually study fencing at some point to take on this role?
Well, I personally did study fencing with an Olympic wannabe fencer. He knew his stuff. There's a certain irony in there, however, because stagecraft sword fighting is not Olympic sword fighting.
Of course.
It's got to be a little bit more showbiz. They got to hear a little more clang of swords, and you do a head cut with an épée or a foil, which are names of swords, and you don't do that. A saber, you would do a head cut. But it's flashier. So I think some of my training did pay off in that. Hopefully I never gave the other guy nicks, but tenors often are not so skilled with the sword, and that's what really happens when you try to be safe and duck and move away and don't thrust for real, that you can really get into serious trouble. Perhaps the fullest chapter under the performance or under the opera Can Be Dangerous is a subchapter called They've Killed the Dwarf.
I love Nabucco. This is Verdi's Nabucco.
Yeah, that's a Nabucco in Paris. Goes through the whole that seemed to be a cursed production. I won't even go into it, but it's very detailed in the book. But one thing, and Nabucco, I came out standing on a shield held on the four shoulders of four soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And then lightning strikes Nabucco he becomes a religious man and forsakes all of his sins. Well, in the rehearsals, in order to find a way to stand on this big shield, we had to do rehearsals. Well, at one point, one of the soldiers tipped his shoulder, and the whole thing, the whole platform, as it were. Yeah, the shield tipped, and I came down on it, a leg on each side, meaning that the height of the shield was between my legs. Well, if I had been an inch shorter, or if that shield had been an inch higher,
you'd be singing soprano.
I probably would be talking with a different voice. Exactly.
And
the things that went wrong in that production, the things that went wrong should have been filmed. There is actually a video of the performance, but it's the performance, not the accident.
Right.
That was a wild time.
We're speaking with Cheryl Milnes. You actually made your Met debut in Faust back in 1965. Were American singers kind of a rare breed back then, mid-60s?
Well, in a manner of speaking, however, Bob, of course, Robert Merrill and Leonard Warren, who had died on stage in 1960, both Americans, Richard Tucker and Jan Pierce, you know, mm-hmm. all Americans. But it still tended to be Italian-oriented.
Right.
Although I never thought about changing my name because nobody would confuse me. If they could say it and they discovered that Cheryl was, in fact, a guy and not a girl— I had a certain identity. I was the guy. I was the opera singer with a girl's name.
Mm-hmm, right. And coming up at a season which also featured debuts by Mirella Freni and Renata Scotto and Alfredo Kraus and Pilar Lorengar. I mean, you were in tremendous company.
Oh, my heavens.
1965.
Yeah, I should say so. And you're missing one because I debuted with, in the same opera, that night, Montserrat Caballé.
Wow.
It was her Met debut. And, well, in my mind, it was a two-edged sword. At that time, I don't know how old you are, John, but, you know, at one point, New York had 7 daily papers.
Yeah, I don't remember 40, that.
50 years ago. Okay, you're younger than I am. So 7 dailies. You knew you were going to get 7 reviews back in those days. I knew that having Montserrat Caballé in the cast as her debut at the Met would ensure critic attendance.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of the coin, or the flip side, I could be overrun in their desire to hear the big European star because I was the American kid, clearly, unknown except for some city opera things, but basically unknown. So I took a little bit of a chance, but I ended up with about 14 – with some monthly and quarterly magazines, I ended up with about 14 reviews from that one performance. Unfortunately, it just doesn't happen now. You're lucky to get one. So I was lucky.
Well, now, you're a baritone. The tenor seems to be the one that gets the girl all the time. You know,
on stage, yes, on stage.
Ah, okay.
Oops, who's
You know,
who's
I didn't read that chapter that? In this book.
Well, you know, I determined early on it was not going to be a dishing book or a tell-all, as they like to say in the Hollywood terms. I talk about a lot of people, and I tried to be honest. And if there was some kind of overt, deserved critical comment, I said it. I didn't lie. On the other hand, though, it wasn't to dish people. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about John Vickers and Jim McCracken and John Dexter, and I'm thumbing through a ton of people. It wasn't about being cute and critical. I also tried to avoid very hard, and I think I succeeded, to write another, and then I sang.
Right.
And then I
right.
sang, and then I had a great success. And then I went on and had another great success, and then I was just so great. I can't tell you how great I was. I think in as much as it is about me, but I think I avoided that. As much as possible, and I'm pleased with the result.
Well, there certainly were highs, but then in the early 80s, definitely a low with this devastating vocal cord injury that really threatened to destroy your whole career. How did you discover that this was more than just, you know, I overdid it last night?
Yeah, that's complicated. It certainly, the chapter is called A Decade of Panic, and that's not exaggerated. When a singer who has devoted their life to singing opera, concerts, art songs, whatnot, all of a sudden the instrument by which you have made a living and made your life seems not to work, it's pretty devastating stuff. It actually wasn't an injury per se. It was a vocal cord bruise. You know, we bang our skin, we bang our hand or something, we get a little bruise, it gets black and blue. Well, on the hand, on the leg, on the stomach, whatever, it doesn't mean anything. You get a little bruise, which is really just a little leakage from that tiny, tiny capillary. You get a little bruise, a little blood where it's not supposed to be. It changes the symmetry of the vocal folds. If they're not exactly equal, they don't phonate right. And... well, it's too complicated a story, except for a long time. It just wouldn't work right.
Wow.
There's a Tosca. Probably some people have a broadcast from the Met. in which during Carol Neblett's Visi d'Arte, Tosca's very famous aria, I'm sitting at the table having a coffee or something, kind of waiting for the Visi d'Arte to be over, and you can hear me checking my voice in falsetto to see if it would still work. Because there was about a five-year period when I would open my mouth and not be sure what was going to come out. And you can hear little meeps. And somebody called me after the performance and said, "Was that you making that noise?" Well, I was so embarrassed because I had no idea that it would be picked up on the radio mics because it was just a soft little squeak. But I was afraid to open my mouth until I had done that little test.
So, I mean, when you title the chapter, you know, A Decade of Panic, as you say, that's not an exaggeration. Your voice did come back. But then in the mid-90s, you know, the Met eventually stopped calling. And while this isn't, as you say, a dishing book, I mean, you do write rather bluntly that you were hurt and depressed by that.
Of course. No, we won't go into any personalities. The way, you know, the European theaters seem to have a better, or the audiences maybe more than the theaters or both, have a sense of what you've done, where you've come from, your position in life, in a career, and in that house. 652 performances is a lot. Many leading roles. It didn't seem an appropriate way to finish. But, okay, life goes on, and 32 years is more than your 25 traditional in the business world, and you get your watch after 25 years of service. So right. It was 32 years, 42 years of singing professionally. I have no regrets about the career, and life goes on. Things happen. You deal with them and you move on.
We're speaking with Cheryl Milnes, the great American baritone, whose book is called American Aria and was published as American Aria some years ago, and now, Cheryl, republished as American Aria Encore. So what's happened in the intervening years?
What's with Encore?
Yeah.
Well, we were looking for a title, the publisher's Amadeus Press. And in fact, one can go online, amadeuspress.com or amazon.com and order or see about all of their wonderful publications. Amadeus Press is a major
music
middle-sized player, let's say, in the publishing world. They do wonderful art books and music books. We were looking for a title that would indicate that it was still the first part of my life. The first autobiography took me to 1996, where I had just finished the Met and all of that. Well, that's what, 12 years? No, 11 years later. I've added the 11 years. And a couple of little tweaking things in the old book, those things are now in the new book. So it is not the same. And we thought American Aria, same picture, encore, kind of said it without getting too wordy.
Okay.
A couple of tweaking things. I remembered a story only the second time around. It's now in the book. Early on singing with the Goldovsky Touring Company, I was singing Mazzetto. This is the very beginning of the career. And, of course, as we know, reviews are very important, and people are often hired on the basis of good reviews, even when they're not always accurate. Good reviews are not always accurate, or bad reviews are not always accurate. Nevertheless, the printed word has power. We know that. And Mazzetto is a minor character. Good character, but a minor one in Giovanni often is overlooked in the reviews. I got a very good review for Mazzetto from a paper in Cleveland, Tennessee, maybe 5,000, maybe 10,000 people.
Cleveland, Tennessee. Okay.
Right, Tennessee.
Mazzetto
was great. He was great. And I used that in my publicity brochures. I just left out the word Tennessee.
So that's
you do with what you can.
That's the kind of book we're dealing with here, is it? American Aria Encore is the name of the book. Cheryl Milnes, the American baritone, and you've been teaching master classes at Yale and elsewhere. And I guess a final kind of question would be, did your own experience with your injury cause you to focus more on mechanics with the people you teach to kind of help them maybe prevent the sort of bruising that occurred to you?
Actually, no one's ever asked that question before. That's interesting, and I suppose I would have to say yes, even though I've always been an analyzer. That's very good, and I suppose health, vocal stamina, long many years of singing is a primary concern. Yes.
Even for people who didn't get their start hoisting bales of hay on the family farm. Cheryl Milnes, a real pleasure speaking with you. Congratulations on the newly reissued book, American Aria Encore. Cheryl Milnes, my guest on Soundcheck.
Thank you, John.
This is Soundcheck.